Hi, everybody. I'm Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. We are going to discuss land values this week and where they are headed historically and currently. Do the two align? Are there certain years of interest that may be something to look at about direction of growth? Land values usually don't go down. However, the double-digit growth in prices may be a thing of the past, at least for the near future. We're going to get in with a company that deals with a lot of land in the growing regions of this country, Farmers National Company. We're going to talk with Paul Schadig this week. He is going to take a break from a conference that he's at with growers and landowners, and we'll pick his brain about what's the hot topic and what they're talking about, what he's seen, and just some other fun discussions, as we always try to do each and every Tuesday. New episodes are released in both audio and video form. Now, let's get to our discussion.
If I look closely, there's a little bit of sliver of green there. You're sitting in Morris, Illinois today. What do the crops and land look like around you there?
You know, everything out here around since we crossed into Illinois has been pretty impressive. Crops look really uniform. Corn looks great, coming along great. And the soybeans look like they've had just enough moisture to keep going into bloom.
You made the drive over from Kansas City or Omaha?
I came up from Kansas City, had a meeting in Des Moines yesterday, and Morris, Illinois today.
You are with Farmers National, which I believe is based in Omaha. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then you work out of, you know, various places. You're always, it seems like you're always on the road. What are you on the road for today? Can you tell us?
Yeah, we have our landowner workshop series is going on. And so we're covering from Iowa to Indiana this week. And then we'll be back in Nebraska and down by Kansas City next week.
Landowner meetings, is this mostly for returning customers? You got some new customers in there? What do you have?
It's usually a mix of 50-50. We have some potential new clients that come for information, and then a lot of our existing clients just come, and it's kind of an update. Great time of the year to update them on progress of crops and commodities and land markets.
All right, so that's what you're talking about in general. What's the headline? What's the first slide? What's the big headline here that you're talking about right now?
In the landowner workshop series, it's all this year is all about your legacy in owning land and the opportunities that are there for it.
Are you finding, how long have you been in the industry? Let's start with that before I go into that second question.
So I've been with Farmers National Company 24 years. I started my career out in western Nebraska as a farm manager, real estate agent, before moving into a sales manager role, and then into my current role as VP of real estate.
And you're from western Nebraska, is that right?
Yes, I'm a western Nebraska boy, right there on the Wyoming border. You could almost spit across the border to Wyoming, but out there in where it's very arid and a lot of challenges there that they don't see out here east.
Did you grow up on a ranch or a farm?
Yeah, combination farm and ranch and cattle and some row crops and dry land wheat.
How'd you end up deciding to not stay on the farm and do something else?
Well, after college, I actually did stay on the farm for about 15 years, and it was in that glorious time of the 80s when interest rates looked, today's interest rates looked very cheap compared to what they were back then. And so, you know, we had some success, but it was a struggle. And when I had an opportunity to come to work for Farmers National, I did that. And I've really enjoyed that.
And Farmers National, you're not auctioning, you're not a land auction company, right?
Well, we actually are. We're what you'd call a landowner services company. We have 10 different lines of business that involve everything above and below the ground. And our primary focus is farm and ranch management, but real estate is a close second to that and goes hand in hand when someone wants to add to their portfolio or maybe divest some land.
Well, like anything, you're trying to make sure you have the best information. So you also provide snapshots of the industry. What's the land ownership industry, land sales industry? What's the status right now?
What we've seen, you know, it's if I look over longer term, and that's kind of how I analyze things in that 5-10 year time frame, we've seen some really nice gains in land value, especially over the last 5. But even if we stretch that out to 10, they weren't quite as quick in the early part of those that 10-year time span. And then the past 3 years have been just astronomical with what land values have done. Now, what we have seen is we saw things kind of slow down a little bit in the fourth quarter of last year. And then as we came into 2023, you know, it was kind of let's see how this is going to pan out. And we've seen a further what I call a de-escalation of values. And not reading too much into that, we're not talking about a drop in value. We're just not seeing increases as strong as we did, in 2021. And 2020 and 21 were just through the roof, and double-digit increases across many states. And now we're just down to where we're seeing some single-digit increases. We've even seen some slight decreases when we talk about lower classes of land. Higher classes of land, still great demand for that, and they're still paying a premium.
Which is better for the industry, double-digit increases or a little slower, 1 to 2 to 5%?
I'm a believer in slow and steady, and if we look out over that time period of go clear back into the 40s and see how land has appreciated over time, I really like that slow incremental growth. And so those sharp increases are a little bit spooky because they tend to breed sharp decreases. But the way the ag economy is today, we don't foresee that happening. It's in strong hands. It's not highly leveraged. The ag economy in general is pretty healthy. But that always is a little spooky to see something go up, because I'm a believer in the pendulum theory where, you know, as hard as it swings one way, it could swing the other.
Well, let's go back to your beginnings, the 80s. You know, you saw how quickly things can move and change. Are we in a state of the 80s again here right now?
And based on the way land is not highly leveraged and that balance sheets look good, we're certainly not there. Now, there are a lot of environmental and geopolitical events that could happen, that could drive us to that point. But in today's market, no, we're like I said, the land is held in very strong hands, unlike the way it was in the 80s, 70s, and 80s. So, yeah, we feel pretty good about and very bullish about agriculture in general.
Who is buying the land? Do you keep track of that?
Yeah, we keep close tabs on that, and it's an interesting dynamic. You read the stories about, you know, celebrity buyers and foreign buyers and things like that, but that's what hits the news. The real story lies in that there are the land is being purchased. The actual buyer of the land, over 70% of the time, is a operator farmer, local usually, and they're adding to their farm operation. Now, in saying that, there's a reason that these land values have moved up, and there's another class in the investor type buyers, funds, and just individual investors that are very interested in buying land. And so they are definitely holding a floor, and they're pushing some of those values up. But when they reach a certain point for their return on investment, they step away, no emotion. And then that's when the operator will make that final bid and usually ends up with the ground. And there's a lot of motivating factors. You know, there's guys that have never seen a farm next to them come up for sale, and so they want to take advantage of it. And, there's some pressures with making your operation a scale that will work in today's economy. And so that's the motivation on their side.
Is there an age of a producer? Because what I hear you saying sounds like an old producer, 70 plus ownership. Is that accurate?
As far as buyers go, we do see a lot of buyers in that, definitely 50 to 70 range. There's definitely a lot of that. We do see a lot of young buyers that are using loan vehicles that are out there and options to purchase as if they're able. But I would say the majority are in that 50 to 70 range.
And are you finding, you say, if a neighbor says, oh, I've never seen that land across the road come up for sale, do you have data that says the owner is within 0 to 5 miles from that farm?
Yeah, we do have data that that shows ownership of land and how far they are from the farm, and it's pretty hard to we can draw a circle, but it's not a 2 mile circle. It's, in today's world, it's more like a 20 to 40 mile circle, just because with equipment today they can cover a lot of ground, and 40 miles is not what it was 20 years ago.
And you can easily put machinery on a flatbed and move it from place to place.
Yeah, and as mobile as some of these big planters are and combines and things, they can road them 40 miles without a problem typically. And you know, they can go down there and finish a field one day and be back later that day. So it's just a different ball game than it was 20 years ago.
A few weeks ago on this podcast, I asked a data scientist about this question. Is the ownership going to be stay local? Is there a front for someone else that they're buying for? Do you track that or even want to dip your toe into that?
Some of that's hard to disseminate, because if you have a fund that comes in and buys land, that ownership could be very diverse, and that could be a long ways away from the farm. But again, that is a minority ownership in land, but definitely a fact that some of those are hard to disseminate. Some that you do see, some are very transparent also, that they let you know, and it might be a group of 5 to 10 individuals, and they're happy to be part of that community and buy land and turn around and lease it back to maybe the guy that's been farming it or another local operator that they have a relationship with.
I understand Farmers National is a business. Does it matter who owns land to you?
I think when we look philosophically, we all would rather see a lot of that land be owned by people that want an attachment to it. So an operator, without a doubt, has an attachment to that, very emotional and as a business. And so I'm always really encouraged when we have people that maybe grew up in an area, or maybe it was they had a family farm, that come in and buy, even if they are not going to be the operator, that they are a landowner that is leasing it out to a local individual. And if we look back over time, you look back in the 20s and 30s, my great-grandfather ended up with a bunch of farms. He was in the banking business. And when they went through the stock market crash, he ended up with some farms that were not close to him. They were clear across the state. And sometimes that's a necessity, where someone has to own that land. And what it did is it allowed a lot of those operators who didn't have the capital to buy the land, they got to stay there, and they got to farm that land. And we're seeing a little bit of that in today's market, not like we did back in 1929, but definitely I enjoy seeing that. On the flip side, I'm also very encouraged by some of these some of the funds or investment groups that come in and want to be involved in agriculture. They see that there's a positive aspect to agriculture, and that they can be a part of that. So that's also encouraging.
So you're seeing that as a positive for agriculture if outside right. money comes in, because we talk about in commodities all the time, if outside money comes in, that usually pushes the value up, and that person who has a bushel of corn or beans to sell benefits from a higher marketplace. But is the same hold true when it comes to land, when it becomes more expensive?
It certainly can. It sometimes, like I was describing, holding that floor in the value, that pushes those local operators to have to pay more for that land. That's probably not an advantage for them. But in the overall picture, if the land's going to be owned by someone, and if we can keep those operators operating the farm, I see that as a positive more so than splintered ownership in or from faraway places.
In the latest release from your company, you talk about ebbs and flows. Is this part of that natural ebbs and flows of the industry that you were referring to?
Well, I think it certainly can be, because when we look back across the charts in history, you know, you look at the 70s is probably the biggest ebb and flow that we've seen. We saw a huge run up in values and then a huge drop in values. And then it's a pretty incremental increase going through the 80s, especially from the 90s up until today, or actually from the 90s till about 2016 to 18. And then that's when we started to see that sharp increase in values. And overall, I think the trend line will continue to go up. The ebb and flow that we're seeing now, we've definitely seen the high side of it. I hope that we don't see a dramatic, equal drop in value. And like we've talked about with the economy where it's at today, I don't anticipate that. I would rather see a reset of a new normal. And then, you know, we want that trend line to continue up eventually, because that benefits everyone. Because if you own land, you want that to appreciate in value. You don't want it to stay flat or decrease.
Paul, we talk about ebbs and flows. We know that farm economies have tendencies to be bubbles at times. Are you concerned that land had a bubble, or was this one of those slow deceleration of values that you talked about in the beginning?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident that when we compare it, especially back to what happened in the 70s and 80s, we saw, you know, a huge run up in values and then a sharp drop. And the economy, farm economy at that time was quite a bit different than what it is today. So I think what I anticipate seeing is, even with this sharp run up, if we do see a decrease, I look for more of a resetting of values and maybe setting a new normal. It may come down and settle, but I don't look for a sharp drop.
What would be factors that would play into your thinking?
So the things that could affect that thinking is geopolitical events, maybe some environmental events that could have a huge impact on the farm economy. Because as strong as it is right now, it's going to take something pretty drastic to make a big effect in the economy to slow it down.
So geopolitical. So I guess I'll go back to the very first question I asked you about the weather and if it's green and how the crops look. How does that influence a crop season, a drought, or that type of impact on a crop? Does that impact land values too?
It certainly can, and an example would be where out west they've had some areas of the third year of drought, and we're starting to see an impact of land values there. So 1 year of drought maybe doesn't impact land values. Two certainly can, and three probably will. And then when we talk about the geopolitical side of it, you know, what's happening today again in Ukraine and things like that, those will have some pretty sharp impacts, or have the potential to make some sharp impacts in both the economy and subsequently could be land values.
Do you see land values and their increased strength tied more to, say, the overall economy and the stock market than, say, the commodity market?
Well, commodities are going to continue to be the main driver in land sales, without a doubt. But with that being said, there's a lot of other things that can play into the equation. The one that we really see right now is a supply-demand scenario, where there are simply more motivated buyers out there than there are willing sellers. It really boils down to simple economics there.
Ah, the old economics, right?
Exactly.
Do you see the motivated buyers? I guess it goes back to that earlier discussion we had about this outside money coming in that sees value in agriculture. I'm guessing it's important to see value in agriculture, but how did agriculture land become such a good place for some of those outside buyers?
Well, I think when you look at the market dynamics, stock market dynamics in general, and you have individuals that historically have invested in the stock market, and then when you show them a graph of the long-term value of ag land and how it's appreciated, even with its ebbs and flows, I think there's a lot of people that saw value in that. And then with the ag economy showing that there's a potential for returns in general without taking into account land appreciation, then it started to make sense. And we definitely have investors that look at it two different ways. Some want to see my annual ROI, some want to see my annual ROI plus this appreciation in value. And a lot of investors back in the early 2000s came in and said, you know, I'm going to buy this farm and flip it in 2 years and make money. And now we're seeing more, they all have a longer term vision. If they're buying a farm or farms, it's a longer term vision.
Which is better, the long term or the flipper?
I'd take long term any day.
But a long term buyer or a long term holder of land doesn't give you any business, though.
Well, it's true that could be part of the equation. But I think when I look at the overall economy for agriculture and making sure that stays healthy, I think that longer term investment, and whether longer term means 10 years, 5 years is rather short, but 10 years plus, I think is a good plan.
I asked what the lead slide was in the presentation to your customers right now. What's the lead question that they're asking you?
You know, that crystal ball question of what happens next, what's going to happen in the next 6 months. And that is the interesting topic that everyone wants to ask at the end. And, that's fortunately, we have some pretty good insight. We have a lot of data in today's world where it helps us plan better. And so when we see and look what the economy is like in agriculture, we can feel pretty confident that we're going to go into the next 6 months and into the first part of 2024 with some stability. And I think we're seeing that right now, and in especially in land values.
We get the crystal ball question all the time. That's always the big one. What's the second one then?
Discussing legacy and, you know, what are you going to do with your farm? Are you going to retain it as an asset? And if you do, what's the best vehicle? Is it put it into a trust? Is it to, you know, change it to your kids' names or, you know, different things like that, mainly to avoid taxation and some of those things that can impact after death.
And I'm guessing that's something you can help with.
Yeah, we do have people, experts beyond ourselves that that help talk individuals through that. And that is, every situation is different. That is the beauty of that one size does not fit all, because everyone's family situation is different. Ownership structures are different and goals are different. And so that makes a big part of it.
Exactly. And so the goals might be different. Of, let's say it's a family of four kids. So you got an equal 25% that may now be part of a trust. As years go by and they're 20 to 40 years removed from the farm, does that make them good landowners and the right type of landowner?
Not
for
always.
Agriculture.
Yeah, not always. And we see those family dynamics every day. You mentioned, you know, say there's four siblings. You might have two that have attachment to that land and two that don't. And the two that don't would just as soon sell it. And the two that do would say, you know, this is a good asset. We should hang on to this. And so then if someone has the wherewithal to purchase the others out and they own it themselves, that's great. But that doesn't always happen. So we do explore a lot of different options in selling and reinvesting. And we partnered with a couple other groups where we have some options, you know, to help facilitate the goals of those landowners.
The Federal Reserve says they'd like to see inflation on a 2% clip. That's their goal. Is that a good land value increase goal that you would like, a 2% gain each year?
When I look out across that long-term chart, I feel good about a smaller gain than what we've seen the last few years. That's where I say, you know, those sharp gains are a little bit spooky because you worry what's on the other side. If I'm speaking for other landowners, 2% might be a little bit low. They would probably rather see something closer to 5. Mm-hmm. If I look at it from a landowner perspective, I would say that I would rather be a little higher. But I also understand we have some struggles going on with the economy in general, and we've got to figure out how to get a handle on that.
Well, each time, you're based in Kansas City, company in Omaha. Ernie Goss is a frequent guest on our program, and his survey had in the last year. Oh, woe is coming. And then just in the last 3 months, things have kind of changed maybe it's not so bad. Is that accurate, what you're hearing from customers in your area?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. They want to talk about all the bad that's happening, whether it's the economy or world events. But then if they step back, and I just had a conversation with a gentleman yesterday about what interest rates were in the 70s and 80s compared to today. I mean, they're cheap today compared to that. So it's all a matter of perspective and what you become used to. And I think that some people are pushed to that realization level, as you talked about with Ernie, that you say, whoa, wait a second, this may not be as bad as what we thought.
Is that, do you think, what's happening?
I think there's a lot of that. I see a lot of that, especially in the last 6 months to a year. Some people just kind of sit back and thought, well, you know, if I truly compare a year over year comparison, it really probably isn't as bad as what we thought.
So again, the comparison and the perspective, we've pulled up our view instead of in front of our face. We might be above the neighborhood with the drone, not yet quite at 10,000 feet.
Exactly. Yep.
All right. I'll ask you this to close, Paul. You say you get the question about the crystal ball, and we've talked about where, a little more stable growth, maybe not that double digit. What's the healthiest scenario for land here in the grain belt? What's the perfect conditions to achieve that perfect growth rate?
Well, I think that I like the fact that we have a healthy audience, I'll call it, in when we're specifically talking land and land sales. I like the fact that there is an appetite for ag land, whether it's by operators, whether it's by investors. And I also like the fact that that we have a very vibrant ag economy right now, and I certainly want that to continue. So that equilibrium, I mean, if land prices go too high, that kind of turns into a negative. And if we can keep that equilibrium somewhere, maybe it's going to be in this resetting of the normal land values, and keep that ag economy rolling, I think we'll see some prosperity throughout that time period.
Oh, the chase of the word normal.
Yes, that is. Yeah, what is the new normal?
Right.
The old normal.
Why can't it be the old normal? I mean, what was wrong with normal before, right?
Exactly.
All right, Paul Shattig, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and have fun at your meetings this week.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks, and anytime.
My thanks to Paul Shattig from Farmers National Company based in Omaha, Nebraska. New episodes each and every Tuesday. If you have feedback for me or the show, send an email to markettomarket@iowapbs.org. We thank you. If you've made it this far, we say have a great day.